Are you ready for a war?
It's a trap.
Game over, man. Game over.
She just killed a helicopter with a car.
I was out of bullets.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
This is the moment we've all been waiting for. Cliffhanger after cliffhanger. People in churches. Satan thrown back in hell. Walter White dealing meth. This is it. The grand finale of the BCD Flixtures so far. Now let's take a moment to reflect on the moment so far. Okay, everyone, this is our season / potential series finale podcast. After this podcast, we're going to go on an indefinite hiatus for a while. We're starting up a new podcast we're going to talk about towards the end of the show. So stay tuned and listen to see what our next project's going to be. What was that?
What?
Winter is coming. That's all you need to know. All right, so we're going to go ahead, and we're going to do things a little differently today. So let's go ahead and go back with our introductions. Today, I am your host, Caleb Masters.
Daniel Stahl.
Bama Rogers.
And today we are sponsored by Rat Bastard Root Beer. It drinks like a son of a bitch, and it's us against them. So Trimmer, quit being a dick and drink it.
Wow.
Those are their words, not mine. They're our sponsor, I have to say.
We have sponsors.
I am drinking this Rat Bastard Root Beer right now. Yes, I am. So, we have sponsors on our finale.
We
are that big, okay? Sponsors that I pay for. Okay. So, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start out. This is going to be posted up in April, and we are reviewing a movie, Drive, a movie we've actually mentioned a couple times on the podcast that we all love. So why don't we do a movie we all love? Because we all know what we think already. Because this is like repeat viewing. A couple of us haven't seen this movie in a real long time, and we're going to have a good discussion. But before we get to Drive, we're going to talk about, we're going to reflect on our podcast a little bit and talk about our favorite reviews so far. The favorite movies that we've reviewed, not necessarily based on actual grades as much as it is like us just thinking about, hey, which podcast do we have the most fun recording, and hey, which movies do we like the best. So, all right, let's go ahead and start. Bama, what are your three favorite movies to review?
Well, probably my top favorite one that we did, for this one, it's mostly just the movie itself and how just amazingly the story was told in this and how true it can be to any day and time nowadays. And that's God Bless America. Just because celebrities are completely stupid nowadays, and sometimes you just want to go around and go on a shooting spree.
Just go on a shooting spree, yeah.
And just kill all of them because of their stupidity.
Listen, man, Jersey Shore.
Exactly.
Teen Mom.
Yes.
Preacher's Daughters.
Oh my God. Preacher's Daughters.
I haven't watched that, but I
don't.
Oh, it's terrible.
I saw like a little commercial for it or whatever, and I was like, oh my gosh, they actually made that a real show. Like, I thought they were kind of like joking at first, and yeah. No, it's a real show. I was flipping through the channels the other day with my roommate, Matt, who's been a guest before on this podcast. We were going through and we saw that it was playing, and I looked at him and I was like, okay, Matt, the show's going to be absolutely terrible, but we have to watch one episode so we can say that we've watched it and bash how bad it is. And let me tell you, it was bad. So
it was pretty terrible. I walked in like 5 minutes into the episode.
The commercials look pretty bad.
Yes.
Too, so. But, I mean, God Bless America definitely really kind of speaks to me as to my hatred of some celebrities. And
you like the fact that you actually, you wish you could be that guy to go.
I wish I could
killing spree.
I really wish I could be that guy. These next two aren't in any particular order, but God Bless America is definitely my number one that we did. But Visionaires is another one that we did that I really enjoyed. I've kind of watched a little bit of Zach Galifianakis, but I've seen mostly his comedic stuff, yeah. And he was pretty comedic in this one, but it was a lot different from what he does. It was still his dry humor, but it was still a very well done movie, a dystopian type film. It was very good.
Jeffrey's Morning?
Yes, Jeffrey's Morning.
Jeffrey's Morning.
And
for those of you who can't see, there was a middle finger flying around there somewhere.
All up in my face.
Yeah, you just need to go watch the movie to understand.
And the last one was Clerks. Like Caleb, I'm a Kevin Smith fan.
37.
37. That's an amazing number. Anyway,
She thought so.
well, she didn't know. She didn't think it was that bad. He thought it was that bad.
He thought it was,
you know, what? He wasn't even supposed to be there.
He wasn't even supposed to be there today.
I'm not even supposed to be here today.
Yeah.
Just a great film, or at least I think it's a great film. It's not for everyone. I guess that's why I like it, because it's not really for everyone. It's only for a certain few that can get it. And I definitely got this film.
It's definitely an indie comedy.
Very much so. And I even watched movie Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and they make reference to Clerks a lot.
Yeah, he's got his whole little film universe like all his movies are kind of technically shared with Jay and Silent Bob and stuff. Yeah,
it's like Jay and Silent Bob are in it. Obviously, they're the main people in this one. And the two guys that were working, the guy working the movie store and the convenience store guy was in it, and they make reference to, hey, are you supposed to be here today? Dude, don't even get me started with that. So it's just three of my favorites.
Those are awesome. Yeah, those are all cool. You know, and if I would say, if you're into indie filmmaking, or you yourself want to be an indie filmmaker out there, I say check out Clerks. It's worth a watch. See how they did kind of cool stuff. All right, Still, what are three of your favorite movies we read?
I think we've already talked about, we're gonna have a couple repeats here, but one movie that I really, really enjoyed was actually Lost in Translation. The Lost in Translation was the one with Bill Murray.
Bill Murray.
Scarlett Johansson.
Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson.
What's her name?
Scarlett Johansson.
No. Black Widow? Whatever her real name, her not real name is. She's Black Widow. She's like Scarlett Johansson. She is the star formerly known as Scarlett Johansson, but now is Black Widow.
That's right. But yeah, Lost in Translation. Now
we're also known with the woman who slept with Christian Bale in The Prestige. Okay, go.
Yeah.
Yes, and you know that was one of those movies where I watched it and I kind of liked it and I enjoyed it, but I didn't enjoy it a lot when I first watched it. But then when we came and we recorded the podcast after discussing it, my grade I think actually went up a couple points. You know, like after having the discussion that we had about it, I remember thinking, well, you know, I like this movie a lot more than I actually thought I did. And so that's why this is on my list. I really enjoyed recording it, and I really enjoyed watching it. I would go back and watch it. It was very easy to relate to on many different levels for me. And, you know, I just thought it was a really good film. It was a different romantic-ish movie, but it was also very serious, and it wasn't, you know, it was a good movie,
dramatic, you know, and I think that's always a sign of a great movie, is like you see it, and I mean, like, and there's a lot of movies like this, yeah, you see it, like, oh, that was pretty good, but then when you actually talk about it, you like really delve into it, you're like, holy crap, man, maybe this movie was a lot better than what I thought it was,
which I feel like is gonna happen with Drive today.
I think it's gonna happen,
but we'll get to that later. So that was kind of, and these are in no particular order, by the way. My second one, I'm gonna have to agree with Bama on this, is gonna be God Bless America. I thought that was probably the movie that we watched and reviewed or whatever that had probably a lot of social commentary on it, and probably was one of the strongest commentary on American culture that we watched. You know,
and it was directed by a name named Bobcat Goldthwait. Bobcat was his first name. Is his first name? What the heck? That's awesome.
So I really that was my favorite part of that movie, was just the commentary it had on our society today in America and our culture, and I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the discussion we had with that one.
If you hate reality TV, this is like the perfect hate movie for you. Yes, reality TV and trashy teen TV and all
perfect
that crap.
Movie for
this
you,
is,
to watch.
You will fall in love with this movie immensely.
So if you missed our podcast and you're hearing this now, you might want to go back and check
it
out.
Go back, you know, this one, you know, if you're like a hardcore BCD, you know, like drug addict, you know, you can just power through. We can marathon them, okay?
Oh god.
This is a season finale here. So
you gotta catch up, you gotta watch it.
You gotta like power through it like it's like Lost or Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones, you know, you just gotta sit down and power through it all in one day. So what you need to do is go back and catch our episode of God Bless America.
Right. So I'll have to agree with Bam on that one. That was a very fun one to record and a very good movie. And then my last one was one we did a little bit more recently. It's going to be From Dusk Till Dawn. Now, this probably was my most fun movie that we did. It was just pure entertainment, pure just laughter and hanging out with the guys that I watched it with and just enjoying the movie. And we got to see George Clooney be awesome, which is always awesome. So That's why that one's on here, just for pure entertainment value.
You get to see Quentin Tarantino be himself on the screen.
Exactly.
No, I'm just joking.
And this was just one of the most fun movies. I that we watched, and I want to go back and watch it, you know, with a bunch of people, just laugh, lay back, and just have some fun.
And the complete left turn.
Left turn.
Yes.
The hard left, you take, you're like, what the?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why this also makes a list, just because for the sheer entertainment value of this movie, it's so much fun. So that's why that one made the list as well.
Awesome. All right, well, my three, we have a little bit of overlap, not a whole lot of number. This is actually no order, really. Brick was when I picked. That was our first real episode. We done like a little sneak peek episode. We kind of like we're getting the feel for everything with Looper. But Brick was really one of my favorite. Is one of my favorites. It's such a unique little indie movie that I think takes two genres you would never ever associate with each other and mesh them together to make you believe that these are actually genres that fit together like part. You know, like they're married. Like they just fit together in a way like, wow, I can't believe how much this genre is like that genre, even though you never thought about it like that. And it plays off of both of them. Gets him Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and being a big Rian Johnson fan, director of Looper, Brothers Bloom, and obviously Brick. I really like to root for the little guy. He's a director who's come up through the years and has been successful off Looper, so hopefully he gets some other big projects soon. So that was one of my favorites. Also, a little bit of overlap is From Dusk Till Dawn. I had a lot of fun with that movie. I think we all did. It was a really freaking fun movie. It was a Robert Rodriguez movie written by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Robert Rodriguez. And if there's one thing Rodriguez knows how to do, no matter what you think of him, he makes fun movies. Now some of his movies are legitimately better than others, but I don't think I've seen any of his movies that I was like, wow, that's just trashy. Even freaking Spy Kids 3D, which is absolutely terrible. It's a fun ride. Like, I can enjoy it. I mean, absolutely terrible. Okay, maybe not the one with the lava girl and Shark Boy. Okay.
I don't know.
His kid actually directed that, though. So his name's on it, but whatever. That stuff doesn't count. All I'm saying is this guy makes fun movies, at least every movie I've seen of him. So Dusk Till Dawn was great. I like how it took two genres and, like, literally smashed them together. Kind of the opposite of Brick. They don't really fit together at all. So it's like, oh, throw it together. And somehow it made for a really freaking entertaining movie. And it was just a lot of fun to record and talk with everyone else about the vampires and the not Edwards and the Team Clooney or Team Tarantino, foot fetish versus gunman, I don't, you know, all sorts of things. And all the undertones, like every time you thought the movie was going to be like have something to say, it's like, we gotcha. Yeah. Like the pastor's like, oh, I'm going to go back to God, and they turn into a vampire. Or, yeah. Just remember, Cheech Marin, three times, done. Okay, so, From Dusk Till Dawn is fun. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is another one of my favorites. That's just a really great movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's one of Jim Carrey's most underrated and best performances all around. I think Kate Winslet is also excellent in the movie. And I think it really articulates the feeling of love in a romantic sense.
Yeah. I'll get with you on that. I really like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind too. I have actually, we rewatched it since we watched it for the podcast. I watched it with Rachel and she really liked it too.
So, Rachel!
But so, oh yeah. It was definitely one of the better romantic movies I've ever seen.
Yeah. Really, and it's very psychological. Definitely my cup of tea and stuff like that. And again, yeah, I think it was just an all around great movie. I think you should go watch the movie and then listen to our podcast. I highly, highly recommend that movie. That is all. Us kind of, having a little bit of reviewing our reviews. So that's kind of what we think. We're going to have a couple items we're going to chat about here real quick, just for fun. We're not really doing a news section this week so much. We're going to talk about some things that we're kind of pumped about. Bama, I know you said that you had an item that you were interested in.
Now, this is speculation, rumor, whatever you want to call it. So this may or may not happen. They've been pretty quiet about this, but I saw on the internet, I can't remember exactly where I was, but I saw on the internet that The Legend of Korra, Book 2, or Season 2, whatever you want to call it, would be starting up in mid-April.
And that's the sequel series to Avatar The Last Airbender, for those who don't know. The phenomenal cartoon on Nickelodeon that I can't hire high enough, that I actually put in the same realm. Even though it's a kid, it's designed for kids, I put it in the same realm as like my freaking Breaking Bads, my Game of Thrones, and my Losts and stuff like that.
It's an American anime done right.
Exactly.
Pretty much. And then
such rich storytelling.
Oh yeah.
Okay, we could go on how awesome it is.
We could just do a whole review on it. But anyway, we won't do that. It was rumored that this is going to be starting in mid-April, someone on Twitter asked one of the voice actors.
I think it was Jen Varney.
When the second season would air for this one. And she just simply replied, mid-April. No real details on it. Nothing really special, but they've really kept it quiet on when it's going to be.
Well, and that's
out.
Interesting, though. If it is mid-April, that's literally, that could be in 2 weeks. And there's been hush-hush, no marketing.
Absolutely nothing.
So, I mean, Nickelodeon did a similar thing last year, except for it was at least a month ahead of time. It was in March that we found out it was coming out in April, which, again, surprising. I was like, whoa, that's really soon. So that's why I have that on a hard time to swallow. I hope it's true because I love the show and I'm so excited to see the next season. But I'm also like, what are they going to do? Like, I mean, I guess it doesn't need a ton of advertising, but I mean, like a week, I mean, if you find out a week ahead of time, that's just not much time at all. So I think it'd be awesome. I'm really excited to see what season two goes with that. With the Mon dead, what are they going to do? He was a great villain, by the way.
Very good.
And no more Steve Bloom, one of my favorite voice actors. Okay. So I really want to see where they go with next season. I know they're going to, it's called The Spirit, so she's probably going to get more into the spirit realm and stuff like that. I really want them to go back to Ko the Face Stealer, dude, okay? I'm like, I felt like that one time that Aang saw him in the spirit world, they were like setting something up, and I'm like, oh, dude, they're going to come back, and they never did. But I'm like, Ko is like transient being, so he still exists. I'm like, dude, they got to have her fight this guy sometime, somehow. Just saying. Anyway.
It would be interesting.
So, any thoughts on Korra?
Well, yeah, it's awesome. Obviously, I watched the first Avatar Last Airbender with you guys, and it was an awesome show. And then, you know, we watched the core and thing, and I wasn't as excited about the first season four, but as I talked with you about the first season of Avatar Last Airbender, which is awesome, it didn't necessarily capture me in the very first couple episodes. So, you know, well, I'm really excited to see where they're going to go in this second season of this, and yeah, I'm excited.
And I want to see them bring back Zuko because he's the only character, he's one of the characters that's not dead. I don't know if they're actually going to. He'll be like mega old.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not actually dead. So
Or is he?
They've confirmed that he's not dead. He's like 80-something years old. So I want to see them bring him back somehow. Anyway. Oh, and apparently, you know, the whole Zuko's mom deal, by the way. They're putting that in a comic that's coming out sometime in the next month or so. Anyway, that's beside the point. All right. I have something I want to talk about a little bit. Not going to rant on too long about it, but little game that came out this last week that I've mentioned before.
We've been waiting for
over 2 years for this game since I saw the first demo and I was like, holy crap. Oh, it's called Bioshock Infinite. I bought it at midnight. I beat it in like 2 days. Holy crap. Amazing game. Amazing, amazing game.
Don't ruin it for us, man.
I'm not going to spoil it. Basically, this game, the premise is you're this guy named Booker DeWitt. You're in debt, and these people come to you and offer to give you a clean slate, pay off your debt if you go get this girl named Elizabeth and bring her back to New York. So you go up to this lighthouse, and it like launches you into this city in the sky called Columbia that's ruled by this guy named Comstock, and he's basically this big prophet who is like he believes himself almost like a god. He's a grand prophet who believes God's will that they rule, live above the clouds. They worship the founding fathers, George Washington, Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, that type of deal. So anyway, you're exploring this world, trying to find Elizabeth, and the more you find, the more the weirder this place gets, and the more the story unravels. I was talking to someone that the gameplay mechanics of this game are really great, but they're very, very similar to what you would see in the original Bioshock. I think a little better, a little more polished. And they have some new add-ins. But what really drives this game, I mean, and what makes this game so groundbreaking is a couple things. The first thing is this really just detailed world that is like, it's so just, there's so much depth to it that they've thought it out. And the story is fantastic. That's the next thing is like, it's just a really great story. I was always wanting to keep playing because of the way it was paced. I was like, oh my gosh, you're fine. Every time get through combat, and you're like, okay, what's going on? You find out some story, and then you get into combat. I don't know. And then the last 20, 30 minutes of this game, holy crap. I mean, they're just talking stuff that we've never really had talked about in games in a way that's never been told before is introduced, and I'm really excited to see what the reaction is to this game, what people think this ending means. And the last thing I think is really cool, this game touches on a lot of themes that we have not really messed with in gaming. And I think it's further in game as a form of art where we can talk about such things. Racism, nationalism, religion, revenge, and a new twist on revenge, love. I mean, all sorts of different, these complex themes. It really does feel like a great novel. Literally when I was finished, I was like, wow, I want to start and play again. But I really would compare it to a novel as far as from what it's dealing, the depth it has, and everything, but as a game. So that's why I'm excited. I want to see more games like this, and I really hope this can inspire more creativity.
Do you know if this one has multiple endings like the other ones have?
Nope.
It's not?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, then I already know how it ends.
Yeah?
Don't say anything to me. I'm not going to play it, so yeah, I spoiled myself.
Did you look it up?
Yeah.
Douche.
What? I don't have a console to play it
with. Listen, man.
Okay, just don't talk about it, because I'm going to try to play this
novel. I'll refrain from calling you a douche, but I really don't like it when people spoil themselves about stuff.
But see, if I'm not going to play
he's
it,
never gonna
and,
play it
and you've
like,
already no. played it all the way through, and I was
did you at least get on YouTube? Did you get on YouTube and watch it at least?
Yeah.
Because you actually watched the ending.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. That's a little better. I was like, at least tell me, because like, I hate when people like read the ending, and they're like, yeah, I know what I'm talking about. And I'm like...
No, I watched the ending, and it was... Very interesting.
It's cool. I'm just saying, like, that's the reason I...
That's why I was asking if it had more.
Okay, sorry. I didn't know. Okay. For friend of a douche bit. Okay.
Don't call me a douche.
No, you're not a douche. I'll
punch you in the face.
That's one of my big pet peeves is, like, people, in general, and this isn't always geared at you, it's just, like, when you're really invested in something, and then someone just, like, and, like so...
And you go and read the third... You go and look up all the things about the third book before Game of Thrones Season 3, and you watch, like...
And then you try to talk about it like you know what you're talking about, and I'm like, hey...
We're not talking about Matt Andrews at all, I promise you.
Hey, it's just it's a giant pet peeve of mine, is, like...
Me
too. If you're really invested, and, like, you get there, and, like, there's such an emotional payoff that I don't think people who don't have that investment, like... It's like if you're Mark Harris and you watch the first episode of Lost and then you watch the last episode and Lost, he was like, oh, it was cool, but I'm like, no, but you don't understand. You don't have the emotional impact whatsoever. He's like, no,
did he really did that?
Yeah, yeah. He really did.
Well,
that.
Like, he watched the first episode when it came on,
in 2004.
Like in 2004, when the episode actually came on, like when it first aired. He watched it. And then he actually watched the last episode when it aired.
And like, he's like, oh, I don't know what the ending so much. I thought it was great. And I was like, hash, you didn't even watch the show. I was like, yeah, I didn't matter. I don't like the ending.
We love you, Mark Harris. You're a jerk.
Okay. So that is a giant Caleb Masters pet peeve. So that's why my gut knee-jerk reaction was douche. Yeah. Okay, so at least you had the courtesy to at least watch it. That's a little better.
I'm along the same lines as you, like, I at least for myself, like, I hate spoiling myself. You know that, like, even more so than you do. Like, you like to at least watch interviews about the upcoming stuff. I sometimes don't even like to do that because I feel like they might hint at something and my mind will start trying to come up with solutions already, and I'm just like, I gotta stay away from it. I just gotta watch it purely with no expectation at all.
Well, see, so my thing with this is it's something I'm never gonna play because I don't have a console.
Well, that's a little different too.
And you know, I watched a little bit of gameplay with you. But, I mean, you beat it so quick that there was no way for me to watch the whole thing.
Right.
Which I normally do whenever, I mean.
Right.
Heavy rain.
I mean,
I watched that whole dadgum thing with you, and that thing was amazing.
So awesome.
But anyway, so I was like, you know what, I'm curious about it. And some of the things I watch on YouTube, they were actually kind of talking about it, and. That's where I really got some of it from. So
that's really fair.
I didn't know that they were going to be talking about the ending, so it just kind of happened.
Oh, yeah. Hey, it's cool. That's cool. We'll have to catch up with this now on podcast because I don't want to spoil Stoll. But I will say this, Stoll, as much as I thought I was going to accidentally figure out what it was before it was, because the whole time I was like, oh, gosh, I've got this theory, but I hope it's wrong because I don't, you know, just because based on some of the reviews I'd read and stuff, I'm like, oh, no, I hope it. I totally didn't see it coming. I didn't see even if I had seen, the thing is, this is a multi-layered ending, you might figure out one part of it, there's still like, you're like, whoa, there's just a lot of other stuff that you're like, whoa. So.
All right, well, let's go.
Yeah, we're going to get on past that. But anyway, Bioshock Infinite, for the love of God, if you like gaming, or if you like storytelling, masterful storytelling, Bioshock Infinite, play it. It's about a 10 to 15 hour game. You won't regret it. Okay. Now we are going to get on to the review of the day, our final review of this season. We've been building up to this review for the last 17 podcasts. All right, everybody, so... Here is the review.
By the way, the review. This is on Netflix. The summary that they give on Netflix, because they always have like a little summary thing on Netflix. Totally, don't expect anything by the summary. It's like something like a driver has to make crucial decisions in his life to move forward or what? Something like that. It's like, what?
Wow. Okay, well, Netflix is not... IMDb is a little better, but it's still not great. Check this out.
I mean, it's
definitely better than that by a lot. I guess this covers it a little bit. A mysterious Hollywood stuntman, mechanic, and getaway driver lands himself in trouble when he helps out his neighbor. Wow, wow, wow. It's a lady. A married woman.
Okay, that kind of is the basic
it's
idea.
The basic.
Hey, her husband's in jail.
Her husband gets out of jail, though, and guess what?
We're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about it. And then we're going to spoil it, and then we're going to be like, bam. All right, so...
I'll spoil everything. I don't care.
Let's go. Initial knee-jerk reactions.
Well, we all watched this together, and that was the first time I watched it. And from that very first viewing, I was like, this is a film that is very different from most everything else that's out there right now. And I enjoyed it very much. With the second viewing of this, I still enjoyed it, but I wouldn't say it was the same as that very first time that I watched it. Cause I mean, second time watching, you know what's going on, but I was able to enjoy more of what was going on. Like I really thought I knew the character a little bit more in this second viewing. And I was able to, you know, see some things that were going on throughout it and just love this movie a lot.
And I think it's really funny that you say know the character. And this is not criticism of you at all, by the way. So we really don't know the character at all. We know nothing about this guy.
So much.
We know nothing about this guy.
Just so you guys know, like, this guy actually does not get a name. Like, they don't actually name
him. In the credits, he's listed as driver. Okay, we should probably specify. This is Ryan Gosling starring. Sorry, we haven't specified. And literally, in the credits, but here's how great this movie is. Like, you don't even, at a point, you forget that they never told you his name.
And you don't even care.
And you don't even care. And then it's like one of those, the credits rolls and it says, driver, you're like, I didn't
never
know
had
your name. Yeah. Oh gosh, one of the main things great in this movie, I have a little allusion I want to get to about the backstory of this character, we'll get into it. But first, Stoll, what is...
Well, as Mama said, I think we all watched this in theaters together when it came out. Were you there with us in theaters, or...
Did you watch it when we get on DVD later?
I think it was on DVD.
Okay.
Well, this was my... I remember going to the movie with Caleb, at least, yeah. And we watched it in theaters. And I remember thinking, that was a really good movie. I don't know if I like it. That was my first reaction, because it's definitely different. It's definitely got some... like Mama was saying, it's weird in the sense that not a lot of other movies are like this movie. There's a lot of this movie... There's not very much dialogue in this movie. It's a very quiet movie. There's a lot of stuff where you just have to watch... the person reacts to certain things, and that's all that you're watching.
I will say one thing. The music throughout this
is awesome.
Oh my gosh, very fitting.
Yeah,
oh my
especially gosh, the ending song, which we can get to later.
Be a Real Human Being.
Yeah, which is also in the middle.
Yeah, yes, it is. That song is very fitting, but I want to talk about why later on. But so that was kind of my first reaction. So this is actually my second viewing. So it's been a while even since my first viewing. I've always wanted to watch this a second time. I think it's probably been like 2 years since this movie came out.
About a year and a half.
A year and a half.
2011.
Yeah.
It was October 2011.
September 16th.
Well, I think we saw it in October.
Okay. Well,
anyway, we saw it when it came out. Yeah.
Okay. So
IMDb'd. Boom.
So anyway, it's been about a year and a half ish since we've seen it, and so I was glad to go back and see it. And my reaction after this one was, man, this is a really good movie. I really like this movie a lot. My kind of interpretation of the movie is this movie is about this character seeing this character where he's at the beginning and where he is at the end, and kind of what happens to him as a person, which I kind of think that his story relates to that song a lot. Yeah. Which I think we'll have to spoil some stuff, so we'll wait on that. But this is all about him, and like Mama said, I definitely felt like I knew this character better the second time. I really got to understand him. And feel like I knew where he was coming from and understood why he was doing what he was doing and things like that. And some of the allusions that they make to his past and things like that, which, like they said, they never actually tell us about his past, but there's definitely some imagery that would suggest certain things about his past.
There's some key dialogue that's this exchange that, yeah.
Yes. And so, and you know, when this movie starts, the opening scene is he's driving these criminals to go rob this building. You don't really know what's in the building or whatever, but they're robbing it. And he's just their driver. So he's their getaway car, basically. And you see him do all these little cool maneuvers to get away from the police and things like that. He's very intelligent about the way that he goes about that. And you see that he's a really good driver. And that's where how it opens up. And then he, you know, he meets his neighbor, and they start building kind of a connection. And so, and then the movie just kind of goes from there. And it's just about the character, how his interaction with her affects him as a person.
Right.
And that's kind of the story. I loved it the second time. I thought I really enjoyed this movie the second time.
All right, Drive. This is a movie I had probably seen, gosh, six times maybe. We went and saw it in theaters, and I was like, dude, I freaking like this movie. It's pretty great. I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I thought this was really great. I thought it was really cool. And again, unlike anything I'd seen at least in recent memory. But then, the longer I thought about it, I was like, man, that was a really good movie. Over the course, between that time, that movie came out on DVD, and I saw it in theaters, I was like, that was a great movie. I can't wait to watch it again. Okay, so I go back and watch it the second time. As much as I liked it the first time, I loved it the second time. Like, I am like, holy crap, man. And this movie's just doing so much, but it's so basic and simple, but it's doing so much. It's so creative, and it's meshing so much. And then third time, I'm like, holy crap, this movie's amazing. And it's one of those every single time. It gets better. Every time. And I absolutely love this movie. On time, well, I think number five, I think is the time I've seen this. Yeah, this is an excellent movie. We're going to get into specifics here in a little bit, but it does a lot of, we talk about genre meshing a lot. This movie does a lot of that. Does a great character story. It is a retro 80s movie. It's like a callback to the 80s in a lot of ways.
Yes, especially with the music.
The music and the cinematography and just the way they portray Los Angeles. I don't know how to necessarily describe it, but I'm watching it like, this just feels like an 80s movie. And obviously it's not.
IMDb describes it as a crime and drama.
Well, that's definitely true. Definitely a crime drama.
That definitely. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But it's also, if you think about it though, this movie is also a Western.
True.
Obviously, in a traditional sense, if you look at the structure of it, I mean, you get this character who rides into town. He takes care of business, takes out the bad guys, helps the damsel in distress, and he moves on. So, I mean, you know, it's got that feel where it's doing a lot of really, really cool stuff with genres and structure. And then Ryan Gosling's a freaking beast. 2011 for me was the year of Ryan Gosling, okay? We had this, we had Ides of March, and we had Crazy Stupid Love. Three movies, loved all three of those movies, and Ryan Gosling was the lead in all of them. Yes. So, without further ado, we're going to go ahead and break down, still kind of give us a little bit of a layout of the structure. But I think my first question was, how does this hold up on repeat viewings? But I think we've all kind of established that we like it more the second time, the third time, or whatever. What do you guys, if you guys had to say this is a prime, what primary genre, what do you think it would be?
Well, I guess a crime drama is good, but like, I don't really know where to put it exactly, because there also is a hint of romantic element in the movies too. I don't want to call it like a romantic movie because it's not that, but it definitely has some of those romantic feelings in it at certain times throughout the movie. I don't know. It's kind of hard to put it into one genre because it does so many different things.
Right. Well, I think it narrowed down into a box is tricky. And I think, you know, I got into the question, I answered my own question a little bit about the genres, because there's a lot of different genres. I like everything it does, all the different genres it tackles. And I, who am not even a huge fan of the 80s, love the 80s feel with the music and the cinematography. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't know what it is. Like, I just, every time, like, I just get that warm feeling of 80s. I don't know. I don't even like the 80s. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just, it's got that feel.
You don't know the 80s?
I don't know the 80s. I wasn't alive in the 80s.
I was only alive in the 80s for 2 years.
Yeah, I was born in 91.
Wow. You're an old man.
Shut up. I'm 24.
Ooh. I was born in the 90s.
Yeah, 90s where the cool kids are at.
Whatever.
And then there's probably some of our listeners who might be born in the 70s. Okay. Anyway, or if you're Mark Harris, you were born like with Noah or something like that.
1800s.
Yeah, he was Noah's. He was there with Noah. I'm pretty sure.
Well, he was the guy outside the ark. It was like asking him all the questions. He's like, "How do you know God did that?" I mean, come on.
He's like, "Do you really know, man? Do you really know? I question you, man."
How do you know the God? And then when the rain came, he's like, "I know how to swim."
And he swam for 40 days and 40 nights.
40 days and 40 nights, and crawled up on that ark, and he's like, "All right, guys, I'm going to go." You were right.
I see what you did there.
All right. So anyway, I also would like to say throughout this movie is also an art house movie, an art house action movie. Thoughts?
Yeah, I could kind of see that, but I wouldn't really call it a full action movie because
not action.
It has a lot of moments where it's, you know, slowed down and you really.
No, but it isn't. I think action in the sense of art house movies, which are generally not action packed.
Right. But a lot of the time, you kind of get away from the action and you see the developing relationship between Ryan Gosling's character, Driver, and Irene.
Yeah.
Is the woman's name? Yeah, yeah. Irene. And just how they become really good friends. He helps her out when her car breaks down, driving her to work and whatnot and everywhere. So if I were to try and pigeonhole this into a genre, which you really can't just put it into one, I would have to agree with what IMDb classifies it as a crime drama.
Okay.
You do have the crime element.
Yeah.
In it, like with the beginning of From Dusk Till Dawn. But then, you know, throughout the whole thing, there is the drama of everything else going on mm-hmm. around them.
There's so much different going on in this movie that it really is too hard to put it in one box. So let's talk about the car chase scenes. Okay? These car chase scenes in this movie, there wasn't very many of them, but man...
There was about three
I can think of.
The very beginning...
Yeah, there was the one in the beginning. There was the one in the middle where they tried to do the bank robbery thing. Yeah. And then, that was pretty much it.
Where he bumps the guy off.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a chase.
I mean, he uses the car.
On that scene, did he not feel like Michael Myers to you in that scene?
Oh, he's wearing the mask and stuff like that? Oh, yeah. He totally did. He was, like stalking.
It was almost even filmed that way.
He was stalking Nino. Oh, yeah, with the way he was, like, just standing there. The light was on.
You look up and he's standing there and he comes down, looks at him in the ocean. You walk back and he's on the box. It's like you didn't see him, like, run. He's just there.
He's just there. Very much like a serial killer stalker type thing.
He felt like that a lot.
It was so creepy when he put that mask on and he like looked in the window and then back to, you know what I mean? Like, oh gosh. All right, so let's go ahead and get into, we'll talk more about the car chase sequences in just a second, but I think it's probably really relevant to bring up some of the supporting cast members in this movie. Carey Mulligan played Irene. That's his neighbor that he has a thing with. But notably, also has an excellent supporting cast. Albert Brooks, Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad fame, and Ron Perlman. We all know who Ron Perlman is. So, Hellboy.
Okay.
No, Ron Perlman's up. Albert Brooks.
I don't know how I figured. Rob Perlman. Was he the one that was like kind of like the guy in the middle?
He was Nino. Yeah, he was the guy who's like walked the car. That's a bad.
Yeah. Okay, no, the other guy. What's the other guy's name?
Albert Brooks.
Totally recognized this through his voice. He plays Nemo.
Yeah, no, he plays
Marlin in Finding Nemo. Sorry, he plays in Nemo.
Albert Brooks is an actor. He's in a lot of stuff.
He's been 193 things.
He's in a lot of stuff. He's actually a great actor. And for those of you who paid attention to the Academy a couple of years ago, there was a massive, and I'm talking huge backlash on the internet when he didn't get nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this movie. There was a lot of people really upset about that. And I still to this day think it was pretty crappy. He was in Taxi Driver. I forgot it. Taxi Driver. That's a classic. Anyway, Albert Brooks is in tons of stuff. Great, great actor. But, he plays, it's a great job. He plays kind of like the friend, the middleman. And I knew that was something that talked to him more this time. It's like, I always thought he kind of felt bad about how things had to have to end. But, so, I sympathized with him more this time. And that's what's cool every time you see this movie. And not saying I overall sympathize with him, but there was a moment where I was like, you know, he really is a victim of the circumstances in the sense that, I mean, if he wanted to save his own butt, he had to kill those other guys. He didn't really want to, but he knew he had to because he was in with the mafia, basically. And I didn't sympathize with him in the sense of, like, oh, I feel so sorry for you. But I was like, oh, well, I mean, that sucks because I know you don't really want to do that, but, you know, you're in the mafia, so you're trying to save your own butt. So, like, I guess there was that side of him that I was like, well, he's not just a crazy, you know, he's not just a guy going around to kill. Trying to kill people just because he's like, well, gosh, I know Bryan Cranston's character from we go way back, you know. So I don't know. That was something I stood out from this one. But there was a huge stink over him not getting nominated back in the 2012 Oscars. And you know what the insult to injury was? Personal 2 cents on that was Jonah Hill got nominated in that category that year. Jonah Hill
for what?
For
Moneyball.
Moneyball. Jonah Hill got nominated for Moneyball. Now, that was a great movie, and he was good in that role, but it was a role that anybody could have played. Oh, anyway. Done. So, anyway, Albert Brooks got snubbed. But Bryan Cranston, you know, also an excellent actor recently in Argo and Breaking Bad, plays Shannon, kind of, he's the guy who's kind of like a mentor, caretaker figure to Driver. He's kind of like a business partner, but he actually really cares about him.
Yeah.
Kind of looks at him, not like a son, but like, you know, someone he can like teach and stuff like that.
Well, he did give him a job.
So. He's cool. Also sympathetic. Also scumbag, but sympathetic, you know, because he's always trying to rip people off. But, and then lastly, Ron Perlman, who Nino. Nino's the real douchebag of the story. He's like this guy who works for the mafia, you know, and he's really funny. He's really funny. But he's also the guy, only guy who seems like he's got blood on his hands. He's the only guy who seems like he likes the blood. I should rephrase that. So yeah, you get into that a little bit. Something I wanted to point out though, between Albert Brooks' character, and I'm gonna get his name here real quick. Bernie. Yeah, between Bernie and Driver is there was a scene early on when they first meet.
Yeah.
That I might have picked it on this before. I don't remember, but I was watching. And I was like, you get little hints of his backstory right here, and it just kind of shows those guys understand what kind of men they are too. Just driven the race car, and he gets out and he says,
"Hi, hey, I'm Bernie.
I'm Bernie.
Nice to meet you." And he puts his hand out to shake it.
Yeah, but then Driver's like, "My hands are dirty," and then Bernie's like, "Oh, so are mine." Did they shake hands?
After they established that both their hands are dirty.
Yeah, exactly. And so obviously, I mean, surface level, that's, oh, his hands are really dirty. But like, I mean, like, more metaphorical sense, you're like, oh my gosh, these guys totally understand what kind of dudes they are. They're both like from jaded past. They never tell you Driver is in with the mafia. But, maybe he wasn't in with the mafia, but they definitely, like, this guy has been a killer or...
has alluded to a very, very... Dark past.
And then so he says, "Well, my hands are dirty." I was like, "Okay." So there we go. Like he says, "My hands are dirty too." Like, I don't know. It clicks really well this time. I probably noticed it before, but I wasn't sure. Anyway, that was something really I picked up on. Again, subtle hints of what Driver's past is, and it really was interesting to see. You know, from the very get go, Driver's like, "Yeah, this guy's not good news. Bernie's not good news." So, yeah, so what did you guys think of the performances in the movie, though?
Oh, I thought Ryan Gosling was fantastic in this movie, personally. And all the actors, I think, did a very solid job. I thought the cast was great, and they all did a really good job.
Yeah, it was very good. Probably the scene that I really noticed more this view was the scene after, her husband's name was Standard Gabriel, Irene's husband, who was in prison, but he got out about halfway through. This was after her and Driver had been kind of hanging out, just, you know, friends and all that. During the party of his, you know, welcome back home, congratulations, you're out of jail party, the song's name is Under Your Spell, that's playing in the background. And I think it's a very, very perfectly picked song for this, because it kind of switches in between their party and Driver working on some kind of part, I guess, for a car or something. But it's really showing that, you know, she's having a good time here at the party. You know, her husband's back and everything. She's happy about it. But it's cutting back to Driver. And it's also from both of their perspectives. It's like they're thinking about the other. And so I thought that was perfect pick for the song. I wish I had the lyrics out here, but the lyrics fit in with that very much so.
Yeah, the song choice and just the soundtrack. We were alluded to the soundtrack. The soundtrack is awesome for this film. But
oh, yeah.
Even the song choice itself was very, very good. So.
Well, the thing is, it's got the to describe the music in this movie, it's an very electronical, mm-hmm. 80s sounding soundtrack that I believe most of it's actually new, or if it's not, it was just really well picked. And it just fits the whole tone of the movie. The themes that they're singing about in the songs just blatantly fit the thing. My favorite one was song. Oh yes, A Real Hero.
Yeah, that's
the one. They play it twice at the end of the credits, and then when he's hanging out with Irene in the middle of the movie, he's talking about be a real human being.
It's kind of a call out from her to Driver, you know, a real hero.
Right. But I think he also wants to be a real human too, because I feel like he,
And
because of his past, he's very.
I feel like the movie is a story of how he becomes a human, because and what I mean by that is sort of at the beginning, you know, he's this really tough guy, hard guy, doesn't show very much emotion, things like that. And throughout the movie, you slowly start seeing him be very emotional on certain times and with her, but even in some of the things that he has to do to protect her, in a sense, he becomes very emotional. Like, there'll be times where you see him shaking a lot and things like that. He becomes very emotional throughout the movie, and I feel like it's a story of him becoming, you know, as the song says, like a hero, but also becoming human, being able to get back to that feeling, for having that feeling.
Right. Well, yeah, he rediscovers his humanity, kind of sense. Like, again, he comes from that, it seems like he has that very dark past, and he's at this point in his life, and, like, for him, this girl, he feels something again. So, yeah, he kind of rediscovers his humanity, and I think, yeah, that definitely fits with the movie's doing with the soundtrack. Do we want to go ahead and get into spoilers? All right, we're going to go ahead and move into spoilers. So, if you haven't seen Drive, tune out, because we're going to talk about all the people who get killed. There's lots of them. Okay, so, second half of the movie, we really didn't talk about it a whole lot in the non-spoiler section, but basically, we did talk about how, basically, Shannon, Ryan Gosling, Driver, and Bernie all hook up. They're going to part up in this business. Well, eventually what happens is, Driver's hanging with Irene. Her husband gets out of jail. Well, he's mixed in with some bad guys. Okay, he owes someone something for something.
Protection money,
that's it. And so to get... Driver sees it, and he wants Irene to be happy, even though he knows he can't really have her, per se, because her husband's in the picture. He wants to protect her and take care of her husband and her family. So he offers to do the job with her husband to get them to do whatever it needs to do to take care of the debt. So... they end up going through with it. They get double-crossed at the bank shopping. So Irene's husband gets shot and dies.
At
the crime scene. And then the police show up over it. And then Driver takes off with this other girl who's partnering with them to represent the organization they were working for. And basically, total double-cross. Girl ends up getting killed. Right in this awesome scene where Driver has his finger up like this with a leather glove. And he's like, "You're lying to me." He, like, interrogates the scene with his... He has, like a pistol finger up the whole time. It's kind of hilarious. She's like, "Is he going to keep it up?" He totally keeps it up. Like, that scene should have been 3D because his finger would have gone through the screen. But, anyway, that's beside the point. It's kind of dumb. Anyway, so the spoilers are basically... Well, Bernie, early in the movie, you see he's hooked up with this guy named Nino. These guys both know each other. They kind of work together a little bit. Nino's in with the mob type deal. And what happens is the people that... Irene's husband was hooked up with, worked for Nino. And Nino had actually stolen that money from the East Coast Mafia and was setting him up to be the fall guy, assuming the money would get left behind. So that basically it made Nino look good in the end. Well, when Driver got away with the money, all of a sudden Nino's like, "Crap, I gotta," when he figured out who had the money, he's like, "I gotta kill this guy and I kill anyone who knows him, because basically it's gonna end up making me look bad from the East Coast Mafia. And either they're going to come kill me or my reputation's going to be wrecked." So he meets with Bernie, and Bernie's like, "Oh, crap, you know, we got this business partnership worked out, and it all falls apart. Shannon trying to help Driver tells Bernie what's going on, not realizing that...
it then puts Irene in danger.
It puts her in danger. He doesn't realize that they can't just give the money back. Shannon's like, "Well, if we just give the money back, it'll all be good." But, you know, Nino doesn't see it like that. And Bernie is pretty much going with Nino because he's like, "Crap, my hands are just as dirty as he is." Basically, Shannon ends up getting killed because they're trying to sever all the ties, tie up all the loose ends. And then Driver, after he sees Shannon, goes after Nino and takes Nino out Michael Myers style. Legitimately, it feels very, like, still the same, very serial killer, stalker-ish. Like, he's driving his car, runs off the road, and just, like, walks around. Like, he'll turn the camera, and he'll be gone. And turn back, and he'll be, like, way closer. And the way he walks is very mechanical, and he ends up drowning him out in the ocean. So, by the way, rest in peace, Nino. You were a terrible person, but you were kind of hilarious. So, because Ron Perlman played him really over the top.
Yeah, he did. It was funny.
It was really funny. So, then basically, Bernie figures out what's going on, and he knows about the girl, Irene. So, basically, they set up a deal. He's like, all right, just give me the money, and we'll split. We'll never talk again, blah, blah, blah. The driver knows what kind of guy Bernie is, basically.
He knows what's up.
He knows what's up. He knows that there's no way that they're going to let him walk away alive. So, basically, they show up, they do the deal, and of course Bernie...
After, you know, everyone's died, and it's basically down to Driver and Bernie. They set up a way where Driver's going to give him the money, and they're going to... it's going to protect Irene. He basically makes a deal that says, if you promise Irene won't get hurt, I will give you the money, and she's out of it. She's not even on the map anymore.
Right.
And Bernie says, okay, but I can't necessarily promise the same thing for you, but, you know... And he says, Driver's like, okay, I'm okay with that.
So literally as soon as he hands him the money, or pulls out the money out of his trunk, the guy stabs him. The driver being Driver.
Well, the guy made the mistake of just stabbing him in the stomach.
He did stab himself. He was really good with Shannon, by the way. The way he did it.
Yes.
And you know, I noticed at the beginning of the movie, he never shakes Shannon's hand until that scene where they shake hands and he kills him. Did you notice that? Like, earlier in the movie, he's like, is this a deal? And he's like, yeah. And they never shake hands. Every time they try to shake hands, he never shakes. And Shannon, until the very end... He's like,
in a way, it was almost kind of like he was trying to be nice about it.
Yeah, he was.
Because I don't know if this is true or not, but according to Bernie, like he kind of like he hits him in the wrist and he like hits an artery.
He slices him with a razor vertically up down the wrist.
Right, and so like, blood just starts spilling out, and he says, "Hey, it's over, it's done." You know, this is like as Shannon is dying, getting like literally blood pouring out of him. Bernie says, "Hey, look, this is not painful. I didn't want you to have to go through pain. It's over. It's done." And he like embraces him as he dies, kind of. Yeah. And so, in a weird way, he was trying to be as nice about it as he could because they were kind of buddies.
Yeah.
So,
and that was kind of sad. And that's what I'm saying. I don't necessarily quote unquote sympathize with Bernie, but I do feel like he wouldn't have done any of that if he wasn't in a precarious situation. You know what I mean? Obviously, he's the bad guy, and he shows his colors at the end. You know, killing his friend and then going for Driver and the girl, but. What I was saying was, I was like, well, but really, if Nino hadn't been there, it probably would, the whole scenario probably would have played out way a lot differently. But it was because of who he was and what position he was. He's like, crap, well, I'm with these guys, so I have to do this. Otherwise, I'm screwed, basically. So, not really so much, because those were his friends. I mean, he did care about them. He really did. But it was like one of those, you know, you gotta go.
But as you were saying, like, he goes, as soon as Driver hands over the money, he stabs Driver in the stomach from behind. But of course, Driver. Smart enough to know that stuff like this is going to happen. He also has a knife with him. He turns around and he stabs Bernie in the neck.
Yep.
I believe, right?
Yeah, he stabs in the neck.
And it's like, and instantly Bernie dies.
Which is the better spot to stab him.
Stab in the neck, yep. And then he leaves that he's still, even though everyone's dead and he could have totally taken off the money,
he leaves the money
and drives away. And at that point he's bleeding out and there's a scene where you're like, you see him staring off into the sunset.
It's like a 20-second scene.
It's like literally like just him. And like you're like, oh my gosh, he's dead. Oh my gosh, he's dead. Like you sit there and every time you're like, oh, he's going to blink. No, he doesn't. Like it's like a good at least 20, 30 seconds. You're like, oh my gosh. And then he blinks and you're like, oh my gosh. Because you really think he's dead because he's sitting there with his eyes open.
I'll say that. This movie took time to get some things done. I guess it was a fairly short movie. It was an hour 40 minutes. Yeah. But like that scene, like, and there's a couple of scenes where, especially with Driver's character, he takes his time to relay things to other people or to really, I don't, you know, like that
well,
scene.
He's maybe that corresponds to like he's a very slow, emotionally person. Yeah. I didn't notice how little his character actually says.
He talks very little in this movie.
I mean,
it's very short. It's like little short phrases. Like,
very much so. He's not a silent protagonist, but he's a man of few words. But that's what's great about Gosling's acting job here, though, is he says so much with so little, just and how he says it and how he just carries himself.
This movie, I feel like this film says a lot of things without actually saying it. Like, there's a lot of things that get portrayed on the screen without them actually having to talk
and
about
it. And that is the strength of film. This is why this is a great film, because it says so much, because that is what film does.
One of my favorite scenes, we have a friend, shout out to Dan McBride. He was the first one to kind of mention this, and after watching the second time, I think that he was right about this. There's a scene where he's in the elevator with Irene. They're going down to the parking lot. They're kind of talking about, because when they try to do the fake the robbery, her husband ends up getting shot and killed. And so he's trying to console her a little bit, and they get in the elevator, and there's a guy in a, with a suit there. And immediately, driver kind of looks suspicious of him. He when they get in the elevator door shuts. He glances over, and he can see like a gun in the man's pocket, like sticking out of the man's like inside of his coat or whatever. And so immediately he knows why he's there. He's there to come and kill them because of everything that's happened. So he slowly pushes her like behind him to kind of protect her. And I think he actually kisses her.
Yeah,
in that scene to kind of, I guess, kind of throw the guy off or whatever. And then turns around and like beats the crap out of
this
guy.
He stomps this guy's head into the ground.
He stomps his
foot
face,
go to the ground.
Like his foot goes into the guy's head and then also hits the ground.
Yes.
So we'll just say that. But right after that, you see him kind of like shaking, getting emotional a little bit. And they do like this cinematography shot where they like swing around him and it goes to the back of his back. And he's wearing this jacket, which he wears. He doesn't wear it the whole movie. He only wears it when he's doing a job or when he's doing something that's shady. And it goes back. And like, I noticed this the first time. I didn't click with me as much the second time. They show it and there's this huge scorpion symbol on the back of his jacket. And you see him breathing, and the scorpion symbol is actually moving in and out very slowly because he's breathing so heavy.
Right.
And Dan McBride said this, shout out to Dan McBride, that he thinks that shot like says a lot about his past. Like, you know, possibly that symbol could mean that he was in a gang at one point, or that, you know, this guy's past, he's done this before. You can see that he knows how to kill people. Right. He's very comfortable with the act of killing. Now, he doesn't necessarily like it, I think, at this point. Or he's not in love with the idea of just killing
people.
He does
it out of necessity.
Kind of like Nino. Or he's kind of like, he doesn't care to kill people. You know, he kind of likes it. This guy, he does it because he needs to. And I feel like that scene was like kind of like a, whoa, man, this guy, he has a past. You know, like, you know, we alluded to the dirty hands thing.
Right.
But like even that scene, like when they filmed the back of his jacket, right, it's kind of like a...
And the way the shot, yeah.
Yeah.
The lighting in that scene, I don't know if y'all noticed this, but it fits that very perfectly. Because as he's pushing her towards the corner of it, there's a light on the wall of the elevator. As he's pushing her over there and turns to her, there's a moment where her face, all of her body is like fully enveloped in the light. The guy in the suit is in complete darkness, and he's very half and half.
Yeah,
right.
In both, and I think that really kind of says something about each of them. It's like she is the pure good in this whole situation.
But Driver, he's also got this dark past.
And, you know, Driver's got, you know, he's trying to be good, but he's got this dark past with him. And then you've got the guy that's trying to kill them that's in the complete darkness. So
it's like he's got a dark passenger. Oh! Then the dark shit. Dexter, shout out. Okay, anyway, good.
So I just noticed that the second time through. I didn't really think much of it the first time watching it. I thought that was worth mentioning.
And even after all the, like, you know, terrible ways that he kills people, sometimes I find this guy very likable. Like, I like him a lot.
Yeah. Very much
like,
so, yeah.
And, you know, he does a lot of things. He kills people in some really, like, disturbing
ways.
Brutal and disturbing ways. But, like, I still am like, I really like this guy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he totally is a cowboy, though, because the movie ends with him driving off into the sunset.
Which, the reason he does that is, again, to protect her.
Irene,
both
from, like, the mafia and from himself, again, because I think he might, part of him might feel a little bad about everything that went down, you know?
Yeah. So, and at the beginning, I don't think he would have made a decision like that, but after meeting her and creating this connection with this other human being, he becomes more humanized, he becomes more aware of his feelings and becomes a hero. You know,
right,
as the song alludes to. So I feel like that's the story of this of this film.
It is very one of the many stories in this movie. I think excellent movie all around. This movie really did get Oscar mega snub, man. It only got nominated, I think it was like sound editing or something like that.
What?
I know. That was it. And here's what's crazy. When this movie came out, everyone was like, oh my gosh, this movie is Oscar all over it. And it got mega snubbed. I mean, the directing was excellent. Writing was excellent. Ryan Gosling. Cinematography, I mean, you would think of all the things. Cinematography in this movie was doggone freaking awesome.
It was nominated for Best Sound Editing.
Nominated for Sound Editing. And didn't win.
No.
So,
which it probably should have won.
It probably should have won. No, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. This movie legitimately was fantastic. And this is the last question I pose is this the most underrated movie of 2011? Now, obviously, we haven't seen every movie of 2011, but...
I feel like you could definitely... easily get behind and make a case for that being true.
I think so. Bama, what do you think?
I would agree. I mean, like we said, it was only nominated for one thing, and you know, it didn't even win in that one thing. Even though we've said, you know, the music and everything else within this was phenomenal. I really think that this just flew under the radar and was not appreciated like it really should have.
I think so. And the thing is, I think among the really hardcore film-going community, like, people love this movie. It just doesn't have that mainstream success stroke. And I guess it just didn't hit the Academy right at the right time and flew under their radar. Because I really do feel like this is a movie that...
What won, like, best film?
Best picture in 2012 was... oh, yeah. The freaking Artist. movie... Okay. I remember in 2011, I was upset about The King's Speech, okay? That ended up not being my favorite movie, and it wouldn't have been my pick, but I was like, you know what, that was a great movie, so whatever, I can live with that. I go in and watch The Artist, I'm like, you know, it's probably going to be the same way. It's probably going to be about the same way, but whatever. And I see The Artist, that movie's not that great. In fact, I think Hugo, the other movie that was, they were both kind of tributes to old school Hollywood, Hugo, 50 times better, didn't win. Anyway, that's another Oscar rage rant. So, anyway, let's go ahead and give it grades. We really need to give it grades.
Yeah.
Okay, let's give grades. All right, Bama, grade it.
A. Plain and simple. Great storytelling. Great acting by everyone, pretty much, throughout this film. Music was really great. I can't quite give it the A+, though.
Whoa.
Okay. Well, it's going to be the first time on the podcast, I think, because it was kind of fitting because it's our finale, but I'm going to give this an A+.
A+.
This, I would say this actually, like, especially after the second viewing, definitely impacted me as a person. It definitely had some things I had to look at it myself and be like, whoa, like, what does this say about me? What does this say about, like, how I think of, like, even God and things right. like that? I think it definitely played a note in my, it definitely touched me the second time, I think. It actually spoke to me in some ways, and so I'm going to have to go out and give it A+. I wouldn't say it changed my life per se, but it definitely impacted my life. So, and is gonna and forced me to think about some things. And so, for that reason, I'm gonna go with an A+.
That's freaking awesome. And this is why I think this movie is amazing, because this is what film is supposed to do. It's supposed to challenge.
Here's what's interesting.
And it's supposed to what?
Oh, sorry. Here's what's interesting though. If you had asked me that after the first viewing, I probably would have given it a B+.
B+.
Second viewing, I give it an A+. That's it. So,
and people, check this movie out more than once. Seriously, watch it once and then. Maybe watch
take some
it,
time.
Take
and
some time.
Again.
Watch it again later. A couple months, something like that. It really is a great movie, and this is why I love film, because it is supposed to. Movies are inherently to entertain us. That's just part of it. But the very best movies are able to entertain, to challenge us, and are really about trying to say something. In which I think a lot of times we have movies that say do one of those three, some maybe two of those three, but very rarely does it seem like we get. Something that encapsulates all those different categories. So for me, this is an A++.
Whoa. Wow.
Plus.
Whoa. I didn't even know that was
Ryan
thing.
Gosling was one of those pluses though. So yeah.
Of course.
Okay. I said this to my roommates while you're watching, because both my roommates actually watched this movie with me. I said this. We were talking about Ryan Gosling about how awesome he was afterwards, and someone said I would be gay for Ryan Gosling. I said, if you get with Ryan Gosling, you're not gay. That's just smart. So.
Yes! Amen! True story. Okay, that's just how life works. Ryan Gosling is a freaking beast. I told you. After 2011, that was the year of Ryan Gosling. Ever since then, I have never thought of that man the same way. I will see any movies in ever. Alright. Which, finally, random rant. Place Beyond the Pines, I was stoked to see it has him and Bradley Cooper in it. Not playing in Oklahoma City. Screw you, Oklahoma City Metro. Okay. Anyway, moving on to our buzz section. It's going to be quite the same. We're just going to capture.
Did we talk about our favorite movies of the upcoming
year? That's about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. We're not really going to do a buzz section. We're just going to talk about, since we're not going to be going on through the summer, do our new podcast and a lot of shuffling going on with a couple of. I'm graduating and we're not sure where that's going to end up at. But anyway, we're going to hit on. We each picked three of our favorite movies to come out this summer, and we're not going to really talk about a whole lot. We're just going to kind of hit on them because we're running out pretty low on time. But let's go ahead and start with Stoll. What are three of your favorite movies this summer?
Okay, well, you know, I was looking through these, and you guys have picked some. I didn't want to pick some of the same ones you did, so I'm excited for the same movies you guys are, too, I think. But one, actually, I didn't get excited to recently. I just saw The Great and Powerful Oz. did not even know this movie existed, but I saw a trailer for this movie, and I was like, whoa, this movie looks like it could be awesome. And the movie is called Now You See Me. And I saw the if you haven't seen the trailer, look it up. Like I said, I had no idea this movie even existed until I saw the trailer, and it looks really good. Like, and I'm kind of pumped about it. I really want to see it. And it's basically, there's these magicians who they use their magic to steal money from like a bank or somebody like that. But even in the trailer, they reveal that, like, but really there's a whole bigger plan even throughout that. Like, they kind of get caught intentionally, I guess. I don't know. Like, but it's really all just a scheme to steal something else. And so like I said, if you haven't seen the trailer, check it out because it looks pretty good. My second one is I saw a trailer that I saw a while ago, and I'm kind of excited. I'm not like super pumped for it, but I was definitely interested to see what it is. And it's called Oblivion. It has Tom Cruise in it, and it's a sci-fi movie about I don't really even know
Earth's
exactly.
Been in this war, they won, quote unquote, but the Earth is pretty much all but destroyed because of the war.
Right, and Tom Cruise is kind of one of the few.
Is that kind of, he's like scouting out the planet to kind of look and see if there's like still like life or. That's what it looks like to me. I don't know.
Right, exactly. And if you, again, you're going to have to watch the trailers for these, but it looks pretty good. I'm kind of intrigued by it.
He discovers that there are people still on Earth, despite the fact that they were told that nothing on Earth was still left alive.
Exactly. And it's just kind of, it's intriguing. I want to kind of see it could be great, it could be not so great. So that's just something that intrigued me. And then my last one was Pacific Rim.
Yeah!
Enough said.
Giant robots kill monsters. You know, this movie's had early screenings already, like really early ones out. I think it's like with some unfinished CGI effects or everything, but it's getting really good early. I mean, this movie's not coming out until July, but it's getting really good hype from like it's like other people in the film industry who have seen screenings of this movie. They say it looks it's really good, a really good time. And I think it's going to be what Transformers, we always hoped it would be, but failed so epically at. So I think that is the movie we're going to get. I think that, yeah, it looks cool. Guillermo, yeah. That's Del Toro.
Check out the trailers for all these.
You love Del Toro. You go see the movie.
Yeah. Again, check out the trailers for all these. That'll help you decide if you kind of want to see them or whatever. But those are some of the ones I'm intrigued by, excited for.
Idris Elba, black guy from The Wire. Oh, wait, there are all people black in The Wire. Black guy from Prometheus. He's an awesome actor. Yes. I'm not racist. All right. We do not, here at the BCD, we do not support racism in any form or fashion. Okay. Bam! Three of your most anticipated movies.
Okay, one of these is pretty obvious, I think, for most of us, because we like superhero movies. I mean, we all went and saw The Avengers at midnight on the premiere. And this one is Iron Man 3.
Yes, especially with all the trailers that are coming out. Like, I'm just
There's been some pretty cool trailers come out with this. It comes out May 3rd, so it's kind of on that cusp of beginning of summer, kind of kicking off all the summer.
Yeah, the first weekend of May usually kicks off the summer blockbuster.
So I'm looking forward to this because on my Facebook feed, I've been seeing like they're showing all the different types of armors that will be in this. There's like 20 of them or something. It's ridiculous, and so it's neat just kind of get a little look at some of the things that are going to be in there. We've been speculating on all the different types of things that are going to happen. From what we can really tell is this is going to be really more so of Tony Stark.
Yeah, they said that outside Marvel of the suit. Said they don't really, outside of the suit, yeah. They want to make it more of a character story than the last.
Yeah, and it seems that way, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah, well, me too. I don't want them to do Iron Man 2 again.
Because I actually like Tony Stark's character a lot. And obviously Robert Downey Jr. is perfect for that role.
You mean you just like Robert Downey Jr.?
I really like Tony Stark.
So you like Robert Downey?
Yes.
Yeah, they are the same person. So.
They're pretty much the same.
Yeah, I know they're going back to the root, which is good. I think after Iron Man 2 especially, we could use that. I'm not going to lie, guys. I'm not feeling on this movie. Obviously, I'm going to go see it. I mean, I go see everything. Yeah, and my family, I don't know. By the way. Depends on if I get an early screening, and my family's going to
come out on
Thursday. So, anyway. I don't know, like, I think it looks cool. I don't know if it's because I'm kind of burned on the whole Marvel superhero thing. Like, yeah. I'm just like, I just saw Tony Stark last year, and I mean, I'm going to go see it, and I'm going to enjoy it. I know it'll be good, but it's one of those, I'm like, and all the movies come out, and I'm just like, it's almost like Marvel puts stuff out every year. It's almost like checking a box. Well, you know what I mean? I'm like,
they've got so much that they're doing. I mean, they're going to have, of course, Iron
Man. Right, they have sequels to everything.
They've got sequel to Thor, right. Sequel to Captain America, getting set up for whatever Phase 2 is for.
And I think this episode went good, but I guess it's one of those things, it's like now, it's like one of those, it's expected of the summer. We have Marvel movies, so it's like, okay, well, and with Marvel movies, those, I mean, not to say they're not really formulated, but you know, there's a certain way they make their movies that you kind of know what you're going to get. So, for me, it's kind of like, I mean, it's checking the box. I got my Marvel movie for the summer. I'm going to enjoy it. It'll be fun. I love Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. But I'm also kind of like, it's not like, it doesn't look like it's going to do anything that's going to like, it's not, I don't think it's going to do anything like Iron Man 1 did, where it changed the way superhero movies were made. So, I don't know. I'm not trying to be a buzzkill. Oh! But, I don't know. I just have to be on that. I mean, it's just...
Well, you can feel that way, and I'll be excited for it.
That's totally fine. That's fine.
Okay, the next one I have on here is After Earth. Now, this one hasn't gotten a lot of publicity for it. It's a Will Smith movie. I don't know. Is his son...
Jaden Smith.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was his son or not. Him and his son, Jaden, are... I can't really. They're traveling. Do they travel through space?
They're like traveling through space and they crash on Earth, I guess.
Like, okay.
After I think I don't. I haven't read a ton on it. I just seen some trailers.
There's really not a whole lot on this. Basically, Will Smith and his son Jaden. I don't even know their character names, but they're traveling through space and they land on a planet that's a lot like Earth. And with the title, I'm guessing it would be Earth after something has happened. They don't really ever say. And they have to survive on this new Earth where there's massive creatures everywhere. And they have to... Kind of a survival type movie. I think Will Smith's character gets injured when they land on the planet or something. So it looks interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know... I mean, we've seen Jaden Smith in some movies before, and they haven't really done.
You want me to drop a bomb on you? You want me to drop a bomb on you? I don't know if it's a bomb or not.
Hold on, wait. I saw the trailer, and I was definitely intrigued by and interested as well.
Yeah. I think I'm curious about it, but
I'm curious.
Do you know who's directing this movie?
Who it is? I can't remember.
You really don't know? Do you know?
M. Night Shyamalan.
It is M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, crap.
You notice they have not played that up in any of the trailers at all.
Well, they should.
Exactly. I mean, it's really smart on their part to not do that, but I'm just saying, most of the rest, and I don't know if it's going to be bad. I really don't. M. Night Shyamalan is a capable film director, and it does have Will Smith and his son. They're all capable.
Yes.
So I'm not saying it's going to be bad, but it's like, a lot of people, like, I've actually talked to people, and they're like, oh, that looks cool. I'm like, you know who's directing it, right? And they're like, oh, maybe I don't want to see it.
I'm still kind of excited for it, because I think it could go... In a certain way I think it
has very good potential. I don't want to be like, because I actually have faith that M. Night Shyamalan can still make a very good movie at some point in time.
Just stay away from The Last Airbender.
Oh, God, please.
And the last one, and probably the one that I'm most excited for because of the cast, or some of the cast that has been put into this, and that's Kick-Ass 2.
Yeah.
Me too.
We get to see the return of some of these crazy characters, Hit Girl.
The mother...
That guy. The guy that was a good guy but is now a bad guy.
The supervillain formerly known as the Red Mist.
Yes. And we get to see Jim Carrey in this film. And we've seen a clip of this. And he looks amazing.
He looks hilarious.
What's the name
of this? Captain Stars and Stripes.
Captain Stars and Stripes. And he definitely fits this. He's in Army Fatigues. And I love his weapon. His weapon is like the greatest thing ever. It is an axe handle, no axe head on it. But at the tips of the axe head, there's the red and white stripes on one end, and then there's the blue field and white stars on the other.
Yeah,
this just screams America.
America. And
it's
the
voice. I mean, because Jim Carrey is many voices. The voice he uses in this is unlike anything I've ever heard him use.
Well, he's because a really gruff voice. It's funny.
He uses the really gruff Sergeant General.
Captain Kirk, Stars and Stripes.
So I'm really looking forward to this.
Me too.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think it looks great.
What day is that?
It just recently got pushed back. I can't remember. Hold on. Let me check the date.
Because I was hoping maybe we could
It was supposed
together.
To come out in July, but I think it got pushed back.
Ooh.
It's August, I believe.
I think it's early August.
Yeah.
We'll be able to catch it.
together then.
Well, we might be able to catch it together. Yeah, it
depends. Oh, August 16th, 2013.
Okay,
so mid August. So yeah, that'll be a great one to cap off the summer with. I'm gonna go through mine real quickly because we're really running short on time. Star Trek Into Darkness. I am really stoked for this. Love the first Star Trek. I love J.J. Abrams, and I just like everything about it, the first one. And this one looks like it's going to go in a much darker direction, hence the name Into Darkness. But it also looks like a lot of fun. We saw the first, we already talked about the IMAX preview that we saw earlier on one of their older podcasts. Awesome. Had a great, fun summer blockbuster feel to it. Next one is The Wolverine. Trailers just came out for two different trailers for this movie just came out this week. One domestic, one international. I'm really stoked for this movie because it looks like something I haven't seen. It looks like a Wolverine movie, like a superhero movie we haven't really seen as much before. It looks like a very different take, all really dramatic. I'm really cool with that. But I feel like I haven't seen an X-Men movie in a while. I know we saw it the first class a couple years ago, but that was different. This feels more, still more tied to the original trilogy. The first two, the third one that didn't happen. Yeah, it's kind of that story arc. So yeah, I'm really excited to see that, and I love seeing Hugh Jackman play the character. So I'm stoked. Next one is a movie called Elysium. This is directed by Neil Blomkamp. He is the one who directed District 9, was at one point attached to Halo. This movie looks awesome. It's got Matt Damon, I believe Jodie Foster, a whole slew of other actors in it. It looks really cool. It sounds really cool, but I don't want to spend. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm gonna run through it. Check it out. No trailers up yet, but look it up. And last but not least, Man of Steel. Oh my gosh, I'm stoked for this movie. I've already ranted about this movie on the podcast several times before. So check out our old podcast and hear me rant about how I can't wait to see Man of Steel. Oh, on this note, rumor/potential spoiler. Okay, I read this, and if this is true, I'll be really happy. That Lex Luthor might actually be in the movie after all. But they kept it very under wraps because they asked one of the co-writers of the script, David S. Goyer. They asked him about their non-inclusion of Lex Luthor, and his response was, "Well, I don't think anyone's ever denied that he wasn't in the movie." And then there was another actor. Curious enough, there's another actor in the movie. I can't remember his name. He's like a no-name, like low-brand TV actor who played a Lex Luthor clone in Smallville. Who said, "I am appearing in the movie. I can't tell you who I'm playing, but I'm going to be in the movie." So, a little funny business. I also think it could be Brainiac. That character's friend could be Brainiac. But I think Lex Luthor's a great villain. I think we've been oversaturated with him and oversaturated with a not very good version of him with all the Superman movies. He honestly is a character that I feel like is so key to the mythology. Movies can't exist without him, but I also don't think he needs to be the big bad in every movie. He needs to be a small supporting role player for a couple movies. But anyway, that's the thought. All right, we are going to move into our final closing. We're gonna give you a brief rundown of our Game of Thrones fan cast. It's called The Cast Beyond the Wall. We have talked about Game of Thrones a lot. Obviously, still like last 18 buzz items were.
We've only had 18 episodes.
Well, the last 18 was your buzz item with Game of Thrones, which is cool. We all love Game of Thrones a lot, and we want to change it up. And what we're going to do is we're going to try to go in through and review each episode, hopefully record early in the week. That way we can have it up midweek. That way, when you're getting your Game of the Thrones, you're like, "Man, I just can't wait for the next episode." You can hear what we have to say about the episode before. And we're also going to do a little bit of prehash on the episode to come.
And hopefully we will even be able to bring in other people besides the three of us on every episode. That's kind of our goal.
Yeah,
we can get other people's thoughts besides the three of us.
Our goal is to have different guests on every episode. There's a lot of people around here who watch it, and we would love to have join chat with us about it. We're really excited. We're going to kind of break down. We're going to break down each episode and give our opinions, and it'll totally be spoilers everywhere. So
you should watch the episodes before the actual Game of Thrones episode before you listen to our podcast.
Yes, watch Game of Thrones before you watch the podcast and what's going on. You guys have anything else you want to comment on the Cast Beyond the Wall podcast?
I know that I'm super excited about it. You guys know that I'm super excited about Game of Thrones. I'm excited to go into this new avenue and talk about Game of Thrones with you guys. It'll give us opportunities to kind of reflect on the episode and then see what other people think. Because we're going to throw up another Facebook page for this podcast. So we'll be able to hear your guys' thoughts as well. And that'll be fun. I want to hear what you guys have to say.
And
about
if you're listening to this podcast and you watch Game of Thrones or you know someone who watches Game of Thrones, tell them. We would love to get reader viewership, and we will be totally up for questions Again, like for here,
yeah, and we could, if you have like a, you know, like, hey, I really like this character in this episode. What do you think is going to happen next? Ask those kind of questions, and we'll try to see.
We'll
can
discussion has it
have some discussion about those.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be very interesting for me, and I know this is the same for you. The first two seasons we've watched just on DVD and Blu-ray,
right.
So this will be interesting to actually watch it on TV.
As it's airing, and wait a week.
I have to wait.
That's the same for me, too. I watched the first two seasons right after season two.
Okay, I thought you would.
So for all of us, then.
So for all of us, it'll be interesting going from the watching it straight through on a DVD.
Hour watching it, yeah.
And then having to wait
a week between each other.
And I think this is good, though, because, you know, and
it'll give us time to talk about
it. I think it gives us a lot of great time to talk about what's going on, do our theories, and all that jazz. So I think it'll be fun. And we're really excited to kind of be able to take a story by story, week by week thing. And anyway.
Dragons.
Winter is coming. What's Dead Man Never Die?
Dragons.
Lannister always pays his debts.
Richard the Lannister. Okay. Any other questions?
Dragons.
Screw dragons.
Obviously, we're super excited about this.
We paid the iron price for this podcast, all right? So
that we did.
So please check it out. We're going to have something posted up on the Facebook. We're going to have the podcast up here hopefully sometime by next Wednesday or Thursday. Get on Facebook. Look for us. I will link it to our BCD podcast. So anyway, I think that about does it. We've gone really long today, but I hope you guys have enjoyed listening, and we may, again, continue in the future. But until then, check us out on A Cast Beyond the Wall.
And we just want to thank you guys for listening. You know, this is our 18th episode. And then plus the Looper one. So, you know, we thank you guys for listening. We love you guys. We love doing this. And so we're glad to know that there are people out there that listen to us and are excited about what we're talking about and things like that. So I just want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening when you have the opportunity to. We really appreciate that.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. I know we can be a little rambled every now and then, but we thank you for dealing with us.
You deal with our obnoxiousness to listen to our awesomeness. So,
well, to my awesomeness.
Well, whatever. Okay, and signing off until we come back one day, because it will happen. We have
Bama,
Caleb,
and Daniel.
Where are my dragons?